Hello and welcome to the Fan pregame on Sportsnet, Sportsnet 590. The Fan, it's Chris Schwarfar and Ben Ennis once again filling in for Justin Cuthbert mid-week. We've got lots to go through today. A little golf talk, a little Blue Jays talk, some wild card talk.
Oh, yeah.
Lottery ball talk.
Oh, buddy. I feel like the lottery ball talk has been kind of under discussed.
Yeah, you're bringing it to the airwaves
in
today.
I'll save it for later, but like, what are we doing here talking about the final four games of the season with still, like, I thought it was meaningless baseball. Incorrect. Very meaningful baseball for the Blue Jays, final four games of the season.
That's good tease. We will tell you why they should be losing, okay? Let's bring in Adam Stanley, though, of Sportsnet, of course. We got a great week ahead of us in Montreal. Adam's joining us ahead of the President's Cup. Bonjour. How are you, Adam?
Merci. Yeah, I'm doing well. Merci. Thanks so much. It's very cold here, to be honest.
Oh.
It's less than stellar golfing weather, but finally the tournament's almost underway. Should be awesome.
Who would have figured end of September in Quebec City, beginning of October, I was looking at the forecast, actually, now that you opened the door for hot weather talk. It doesn't look so bad over the weekend. They kind of lucked out because it could have been a nightmare. Mm. I mean, we all know what this climactic region is like at this time of year. It's a roll of the dice that they're playing meaningful golf here at the end of September. It looks like it's going to be okay, though.
It should be all right. Like, thankfully, I know the head golf professional here at the golf course who lent me his jacket because I forgot mine at home. But I think the curious thing is that Mike Weir wanted this golf course to be running fast and firm. That's just not going to happen this week. The rough is up very, very high, which was something that he wanted. It's a little inconsistent out there, just the way that they mowed it and with the weather. So that's going to be something to take a look at over the next couple of days. But the golf course is in absolutely incredible shape. And I'm just really curious to see who is going to have a good week and why, just based on these conditions.
Tell us what's uniquely Canadian about this, because not often that we get it in Canada and in Montreal. I've seen some cool merch with like poutine and beavers. So like, what are they doing to make this one feel like Canada?
The international team is obsessed with poutine. I don't know how it has become like a thing, but I think they served it at a gala last night, and they served it on like the shuttle ride in from the airport or something. So yeah, there's a poutine shirt. There's like a hockey shirt as well. I think there's a beaver shirt. So they've done kind of their best to make this a very Canadiana kind of week. But it's also just in general, just something very, very cool for the international team. The obvious hurdle that Mike Weir has to get over is that there's five different countries on the international squad. There's a lot of languages, of course, being spoken. The cultures are all very different, but they've all really united under the Shield logo. It was actually Ernie Els's friend who was a Navy SEAL who came up with this logo in 2019. And now everything is wrapped in this black and this gold. And Mike Weir told me the other day, it's like, hey, it actually feels like I'm playing for a singular country right now, because everything is wrapped in kind of this particular branding, which has been pretty cool as well.
And they have their own song. I was reading your Twitter profile, Jefferson Starships, we built the city on rock and roll, converted to Weir built this city on black and gold. So are we going to hear that like before the matches? Is that like a celebration song? Like, how is that going to manifest itself?
It seems as if like it was really a caddies thing, and now it's become just the thing. So they're going to play it on the first tee, and as the week kind of goes on, it's just going to be this big sing-along whenever things are happening or whenever there's a lot of international fans all together. So to the tune of We Built the City, we've got Weir has built the city on black and gold. We'll see how that goes.
That's so good. We want to hear a voiceover of you singing it as well. So I saw you had a great article up on sportsnet.ca. Of course, you're pumping out content for us all week. Embracing the underdog. Obviously, we know there's a lot of great golfers on both sides, but the United States have won this many, many times, and they are the favorite again. So what's the mentality of the international squad going into this, knowing they're underdogs, but a lot of, you know, Canadians on home turf that might want to win this or at least be very respectable in their performances?
Yeah, I think we talked to Mike Weir about this, and he kind of was just like, this is a fact, right? We have lost nine straight. The international team has lost nine straight President's Cups to the American side. So yeah, you look at the American side from top to bottom, I think they have nine golfers in the top 20 in the world. And on the international side, I think there's two. So however you want to look at this, the body of work over the last, you know, 10 of these tournaments, the world ranking points of all these guys, it's very clear that the international side is chock full of underdogs as a collective unit. But the unique thing about the international team is that they are also chock full of kind of these young, just superstars in waiting. But these guys don't have any scar tissues. The guys who are the assistant captains, they're the ones that kind of know about these losses year after year after year. But you think about Tom Kim, who's 22 years old, who was this big emotional spark plug at the last President's Cup in 2022. Adam Scott has now played in 11 President's Cups, and they asked all the guys, how old were you when Adam Scott played in his very first President's Cup in 2003? And Tom Kim, he was 1 year old when that happened. So these guys, all they want to do is be part of the team that has that's going to break the streak of losses. And I think they're more motivated to take on that role, play that spoiler. And yeah, they're a bunch of underdogs. But as I wrote, every dog has their day. So I think it's going to be a unique week for sure.
Yeah, can't wait for it starting tomorrow. We need to, in the Ryder Cup and the President's Cup, just call these matches what they are. Best ball and alternate shot. It always gets me messed up, the foursomes, four ball. But we have the matchups for tomorrow's four ball. And what stands out? We got a couple of Canadians in action. Taylor Pendrith, Corey Connors in the last two matches headed out. What stands out to you in tomorrow's first day of golf?
I think what really stood out to me is that the Jason Day Ben Ahn pairing from on the international side to lead off. I really thought that Mike was going to go with, if not a Canadian individual as part of a pairing, or one of these guys that, in my opinion, just the valve is full and they kind of just need to release it. Like Minwoo Lee, chock full of energy, you know, or get a Canadian out there in that first or second pairing and just let them run. Let the crowd get all buzzed up about something. That's not to say that I disagree with the Jason Day and Ben Ahn pairing. I think that that's actually a very, very good grouping together. But energy-wise, I do think that they could have gone maybe a different direction. Obviously, they've got Scottie Scheffler is coming out a little bit later in the day. So world number one, Xander Schauffele, world number two, he's going to play in that first match on the American side. But I think that the international side needs to get off to a good start. They need to get the crowd along their side early. So to go with Jason Day and Ben Ahn first, to me was a curious decision. Even if they swapped the first two pairings, Adam Scott, the icon, the veteran, and Minwoo Lee, the rookie, if they let those guys go out and run early, I think that may have installed a little bit more energy just in the crowd, but maybe they'll go out and win, and you know, I'll be proved incorrect. But you know, none of the pairings I don't think are confusing to me. They're not really jarring. Hideki Matsuyama paired with Corey Connors, that's just going to be a ball striking fiesta. Taylor Pendrith, Kristen Bezuidenhout on the international side, two of the best putters on that team. Sungjae Im and Tom Kim, two just energetic young spark plugs from South Korea. So I think the international team has trotted out the best lineup that they can. It's just a matter of getting off to a good start and getting the international, the Canadian crowd on their side early and get boisterous as well.
We have 3 days of team golf, though, in this event, as opposed to the Ryder Cup. I believe there's only two in the Ryder Cup. So will we see the Canadians ever paired up like that? I think that's what people want to see, right? On home soil, whether it's Mackenzie Hughes getting in there, he's not listed to play in a match tomorrow, Corey Connors or Taylor Pendrith. Will we see a point where the Canadians are playing together?
The short answer is yes. I would bet good money on Corey and Mackenzie Hughes playing together in the alternate shot format on Friday. Their games really, really gel well together. They have been playing together in the practice rounds over the last couple of days. So I do think that they're going to be paired together. I think it remains to be seen if Pendrith and Connors are going to play together. They did play together in 2022 at the last President's Cup, and they lost each of the matches that they were paired up for. So, you know, history is not really on their side. Now their games have changed immensely over the last 2 years, so maybe we will trot them back out again. But yes, I would say that we'll see Hughes and Connors together for sure. And I'm already amped up to see, like, the Mackenzie Hughes energy, the fist pumping, the putts made from a long way, and just the crowd behind that the Canadian pairing. I think it's gonna be awesome.
How have they been speaking about this opportunity to be Canadians on home soil? Was it like a dream come true? Is it something they ever expected to have the opportunity to do, and to be led by Mike Weir and all of it as well?
Yeah, you know, two really big things have stood out for Mackenzie Hughes, who didn't make the team 2 years ago, but did make this team. He was like, I never even got this far in my dreams, you know, playing on a President's Cup team on home soil for my childhood idol. Like, these are things that they can almost like not put into words because they didn't really realize it could ever be a thing that they did. So certainly for Hughes kind of making his President's Cup debut on home soil is just absolutely unbelievable. For Corey and Taylor having played in a President's Cup already, but now to be able to play with these guys who are they're best friends, right? They were all in each other's wedding parties. They were the best men in each other's weddings. You know, they all went to Kent State University together. They've all played on Golf Canada's national team for 10 plus years together. You know, you can kind of keep going on and on and on about how special their relationship is. So to be able to add this to their kind of ever-growing just resumes of guys on the PGA Tour who have all achieved their dreams all together. Like, you kind of just get goosebumps, not just from, you know, a professional sports perspective, but from just a personality and getting to know these guys and them being nice people perspective. It's a pretty darn cool week already for these guys. But, you know, the fact that the golf hasn't even started yet, it makes it even better. So to have the Canadians paired together eventually is going to be awesome. But the fact that they've all made this team playing under Mike Weir, their childhood idol, like I said, is just, it's almost impossible. And it has been hard for these guys to put it into words this week.
Yeah, you have goosebumps as well because it's 10 degrees. So Taylor Pendrith and Corey Connors, as you mentioned, played in a President's Cup already. They have that experience. This is different, right? This is an individual sport. We're not used to seeing, unless you're on the Live Tour, I guess, but we're not used to seeing these PGA Tour players playing in this team format. And I wonder how much of that experience, you know, can you tell a Mackenzie Hughes what to expect and how to react to the different crowds and the different format. I wonder how much of a learning experience that will be for a first-time President's Cup player.
Yeah, it's, you know, 51 weeks out of the year, they're playing in a very, very individual game. Yeah, you've got a caddy out there, but, you know, the caddy's not hitting the shots. And for the alternate shot portion, as you mentioned, Ben, a couple of minutes ago, like, you are literally responsible for your teammate's position and you are responsible for maybe making a birdie for the team or not doing it. So I think the mental hurdle has probably been the bigger thing. Yes, they obviously have played team golf before. You know, they played together in college. Mackenzie Hughes, of course, knows about best ball formats and alternate shot and all these things. But once you kind of get inside the ropes, there's only so much advice that can be provided before you actually have to go out and execute on it. So, yeah, you know, golf-wise, yes, Mackenzie Hughes was in the top five on the PGA Tour this year in both strokes gained putting and strokes gained around the green. There's no denying he's got one of the best short games on the PGA Tour. But will that translate to a team format where somebody is really relying on you, where a squad of 11 other guys are relying on you, the country, the home soil that you're playing on, all those people want you to do well on behalf of like your nation? It's a completely different thing mentally to kind of get over. So I think that's kind of why, back to my point from a few minutes ago, I kind of would have liked to see some of these rookies just go out there and run on the first day and let them get that experience under their belt, so they're not just sitting there waiting for another day of competition and bearing witness to it all to kind of get out there and have their own opportunity to do it. But this was Weir's decision, and we'll have to see how it all unfolds. But like I said, it's going to be very difficult for them to know how to handle it until they just go out and do it.
Yeah, I think it's interesting you're mentioning like the country expectations and the feeling of being on a team, because I obviously reading your article, Mike Weir mentions that he brought in some other Team Canada coaches for some experience, for some lessons on how to build a team and a family. What did you learn about Mike Weir's process in creating this team and why he reached out to hockey coaches that have represented Team Canada to do so?
Yeah, what I learned is that Mike Weir has a very large Rolodex of hockey coaches that he can dial up.
Can he
at
help
any
us
point.
Get guests?
Yeah. I think he might do pretty good. Yeah. John Cooper, he called. Ken Hitchcock showed up at a team dinner and chatted for a little while. So Glenn Sather as well. So I think the unique thing that Mike tried to bring to the table for his guys is that, yes, the Team Canada group, obviously they're all Canadian, but they grew up in different parts of the country. They have different kind of cultural backgrounds. They grew up with different friend groups, and how they got to the NHL was different. And I could kind of go on and on, but one of the common threads, the common theme that Mike Weir learned from all those coaches is that treat it family first, get the wives and the kids involved, and realize that whatever culture you may come from, you have united under this singular culture, this singular shield, this international team for this one particular week. And some of the hockey coaches were saying, like, yeah, we had guys who, when they played on the ice, one team versus two team, like, they hate each other. They really did not get along at all. But put that aside, we are a family this week. We are all Canadian this week. We are playing for something bigger than anything that you can imagine. We are playing for this international team. And Mike has kind of taken all those pointers and really tried to install that in his leadership for this week. We are a family. We are a team. We are the international shield. That's who you're playing for. That's why you're playing. And that's the kind of stuff that he got from those Team Canada coaches.
Yeah, and they're also playing against the top two players in the world, right, on the American side. Scottie Scheffler, Xander Schauffele had incredible, incredible seasons, both of them. Scottie Scheffler, like, historic proportions, how good his season was. I mean, just as far as, like, historical proportions of what a victory would mean, Adam, like, have you thought about, hey, on Sunday, the Internationals actually pull it off on home soil, the Canadians are a part of it. Where would that rank and winning only the Internationals winning this event for only the second time in its history against those players who had those seasons? Like, where would that rank in all-time team golf if the Internationals pulled this off?
Yeah, I know the party will be ranked as the number one in the history of all golfing parties. That's for sure. The Sunday night extravaganza. But in terms of, like, upsets, defeats, I think it's got to be at the top, right? You look at how many times Scottie Scheffler has won this year. And then you look at the guy who's number two on the team in Xander Schauffele, and you look at what he was able to accomplish this year. And then you've got Olympians, you've got major champs, you've got multi-time PGA Tour winners. Like, it's just a complete murderer's row of the best on the American side. And that's not to say that the international team is inexperienced, right? They've only got two rookies on their side and eight guys who are returning. But on paper, they're just not, it's just not the same. Right. So if they're able to get the crowd on their side, if they're able to get some momentum on their side, if they're able to just play kind of as a unit, I think they're going to be better as a, you know, as a squad versus this collection of incredibly impressive individuals that Team USA has.
Yeah, the crowd could play a big factor.
Is there a rink hole? They should get that.
The 13th hole is kind of built out like as a rink. There's no boards along the side, but it's a very stadium atmosphere.
Bring your own boards.
It's very sick. Yeah. a lot of tapping. Yes, exactly.
I can't wait to see how the fans react, because as we also know in these team events, whether it's the Ryder Cup or the President's Cup, it's still a golf event. You want to be respectful. And during the swinging of the golf club, you're quiet, but they are very loud. I don't know. We haven't started the tournament yet here, Adam, but your sense of how excitable these Canadian fans are going to be on the grounds at Royal Montreal, what's your anticipation?
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of fans out there today in not great weather. And to be frank, Thursday, the weather's supposed to be even worse tomorrow, cold and 80% chance of rain. So by the time we get in the weekend, it's supposed to be just an absolutely 10 out of 10 fall weekend here in Montreal. So I do think they are anticipating at least 3,000 people just around that first tee build-out. That first tee build-out is going to be sick. When you see it on TV for the first time, like, it's unbelievable to see it in person, but I'm sure with the drone cameras and the crane cameras, and when everyone sees it for the first time, they're going to be like, wow, this is the biggest golfing event on Canadian soil in Canadian history. And that's entirely accurate. So I really just want the international side to give the fans something to cheer about early, because if they're down 10-6 heading into Sunday, if they're down, you know, 9-4, whatever it is, at some point, there's just going to take a lot of air out of this thing, and it's going to be out of air real early on. And nobody wants that, right? Like, there is buzz right now. The return of Mike Weir as captain on Canadian soil, three Canadians, the most ever on the team, this golden generation of Canadian golfers all having the opportunity to play together. There's a lot of kind of goosebumpy buzz and an undeniable vibe that this team has right now, and you almost don't want to spoil it, you know, by going down 4-1 after the first day and just completely losing it. So all that to say, if the international team gives the crowd a lot to cheer for, you know, all the guys have just been saying, we want the crowd on our side, we want them on our side, we want them on our side, but we have to give them something to cheer for. So it's kind of up to the players at this point, but I'm sure that these sports fans, these Montreal Canadiens fans, these kind of just Canadian golf fans, they're going to be loud. They're going to be boisterous. They're going to be excited, but they need to cheer about something.
You got all the sports cliches down. Start on time. Give the fans something to cheer about.
Get the like, pucks in
get deep. Get the pucks in deep somehow. This weekend, boys.
Going to the dirty areas.
There you go. Yeah, it might be a little
No, that sounds like the bunker. I don't think
yeah,
you,
no,
stay
you
away
don't want
from
that.
The dirty areas.
Clean fairways only. Yeah. Okay.
Well, tight lies only.
Yeah, there you go. Adam, stay warm. Have a lot of fun. We're looking forward to all your content on social and, of course, on sportsnet.ca. Best of luck to the internationals and enjoy.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Yeah, that's Adam Stanley of Sportsnet.ca and Sportsnet. He's got lots of great stuff coming up on his Instagram and his Twitter as well. He played a hole with Mike Weir.
Yeah, I don't know how he drew the club back. Like I've played some golf in nervous moments, like when I play a really nice course, which I've been lucky to do a couple of times on that first tee.
And everyone's waiting for you. It's the worst feeling.
But I can't imagine next to, you know, this country's only major champion. He did an alternate shot
Who
thing
took
with
the
Mike
tee shot, obviously. Mike
so
Weir.
It was Weir.
Okay.
So that's good. Almost worse. It's better that you don't have to take the first shot, but it's almost worse because he pumped one down the middle of the fairway.
Oh, boy.
You want to mess up. What is at the start of a great hole for Mike Weir, and luckily for Adam, he has a nice swing, and he was just short. But yeah, I don't know how he physically was able to draw the club back, because I don't know if I could have.
Yeah, I think that's up on Sportsnet.ca, or at least on YouTube. You can watch Adam and Mike Weir walk a hole and talk about this experience. But yes, it really officially kicks off tomorrow. Adam's got all the pairings and the way to cheer on our international squad. I mean, it's giving Nick Taylor for the Canadian Open moment. If they could do something like this, this is much bigger. But remember that moment where, okay, is he really going to win the Canadian Open on home soil? And he does it with that incredible putt. You know, maybe we get some more Canadian magic on the golf course.
I mean, like he said, when we're talking about the annals of all-time golf and team golf moments, no offense to the LIV Tour, which I'm sure has an incredible comeback story of the Crushers or whatever they did this year. but yeah, when you talk about the Ryder Cup or the or the President's Cup, the fact that the internationals have only won this thing once, they tied once, and you look at the depth of field of the American team and the top two players, that's all you really need to know is Scottie Scheffler and Xander Schauffele are on this team to be able to win this thing. With three Canadians on the team in Montreal would be an all-time moment. I think Nick Taylor's putt probably is still going to stand alone until we get another major champion on the PGA Tour. But, yeah, this could be right behind it.
It could be like a miracle on ice, but on
grass.
Miracle on grass. Sounds like a concert. Okay, speaking of concerts, we're going to give you tickets or an opportunity to win tickets to Metallica. They're bringing their record-breaking M72 World Tour to Rogers Center on April 24th. With Pantera and Suicidal Tendencies, and April 26th with Limp Bizkit and Ice Nine Kills. To celebrate, we've been giving away tickets to both shows. What makes these shows so unique is that there will be no repeat songs over the course of both nights, and you'll have a chance to go to both shows if you win with us. To enter, all you have to do is listen to Sportsnet 590 The Fan for the code word, then text today's code word to 590-590. Standard message and data rates may apply. Today's code word is metal. Text metal to 590-590 right now to enter for your chance to win. If you don't win with us, a reminder, tickets go on sale this Friday at 10 a.m. Eastern. So metal.
Yeah, I can't believe it took this long to get to metal.
I wonder what's next.
Code. I wouldn't hazard to guess.
You'll have to wait till tomorrow to get it. We have only about a minute, so we won't crush in our best bets, but we're going to talk to Shai Davidi on the other side of the break. The Blue Jays have another one against the Red Sox tonight. Kevin Gausman's on the mound, but we were teasing it. We've got some, you know, Ben's been putting the work in with the lottery balls and
I was corrected.
The odds.
Yeah, I initially thought that the Blue Jays had the 7th best lottery odds as currently constituted, but I forgot, of course, the White Sox, despite losing 120 games, cannot draft in the top 10 because they drafted in the top 10 last year and they're too big a market. So they can't draft in the top 10 and the Oakland A's can't draft in the top 10. So Blue Jays actually sitting 5th most lottery balls. I don't know how you necessarily tank a baseball game and I don't know if you should necessarily, but
they just have to put their bullpen in.
And I've got, I actually have the projected first overall selection for next year's.
Okay.
Major League Baseball player draft, and it's a name, actually, that people will know.
Good. Okay. Well, we'll save that for the other side of the break.
Okay.
I think I might know it because I think I laughed when I heard it and I was like, you're kidding me.
Yeah, no.
Is that how I'll react?
Yes. And you know what? If you're a Blue Jays fan, you'll be like, oh, that makes sense because that's what this team does. If, in fact, they select first overall, they've never done it in franchise history, never had the first overall selection. Of course, the lottery's only existed for a couple of years.
All right, well, we'll take a quick break. We'll get to all that and more on the Fan Pregame.
Diving deep into Leafs, Raptors, Jays, and NFL. The J.D. Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, we're back on the Fan Pregame. SportsCenter, SportsNet 590, the Fan. We got the Red Sox and the Blue Jays at 7 o'clock. But the Blue Jays should lose these games, right, Ben?
There's just no debate about it, okay? So you don't go into a season trying to tank.
No.
The White Sox were not trying to tank.
They did a good job at it, though.
Yeah, you know how I know that? Is because they can't draft inside the top 10, and still they set the Major League record, or at least tied it at this point, with 120 losses. It's too long a season. You can't tank, right? You cannot expect to make the playoffs or go through a rebuilding, but you see it all the time. You know, the Royals lost 100 games last year. They could be in the playoffs this year. But at this point, there's four games left, right? You got to do Garrett Sparks. You got to throw
Garrett Sparks.
You got to throw Garrett Sparks to the Wolves here.
Yes.
What are we talking about? Blue Jays in the reverse standings, which I'm sure people haven't been too in tune to.
No, not much.
Because it's depressing. But you should now, because they're only a half game up or behind the Pirates. I'm not sure how you want to view that. But, yeah, they have the seventh worst record in Major League Baseball. The Pirates have the eighth worst, a half game ahead of the Blue Jays. Now, behind the Blue Jays, obviously, or ahead of them in the standings are the White Sox and the A's. So they're ineligible to draft inside the top 10. So the Blue Jays currently, if they stay ahead of the Pirates, will have the fifth most lottery balls when it comes to this offseason's draft lottery. I think it happens in the offseason. It's only happened a couple of years, right? It's supposed to curb tanking. Anyways, fifth most would give them a 10% chance.
It's pretty good.
At the number one overall selection, who is projected to be another Holiday brother.
That's it.
Matt Holiday, he's pumping him out. Jackson Holliday.
That family's wild.
Jackson Holliday, of course, playing for the Baltimore Orioles. A little rough first season in Major League Baseball. Hit his first home run against the Blue Jays this season. His brother, Ethan, also an infielder. He's supposed to be better.
Oh, boy.
They get better as the years go along, apparently.
The parents learn from, like, the first one. Kid number two, three.
I don't know. I don't know how it worked. And who knows? Because who knows what Jackson is?
Yeah.
Who knows with any of these prospects, especially when you're talking about baseball players this young? But Ethan Holliday is the projected first overall selection. In next year's first-year Major League Baseball player draft, the Blue Jays have never had the first overall selection. Again, the lottery system is brand new. They've never had the worst record in all of Major League Baseball. Could be something to keep an eye on. I don't know how you do it. And the Blue Jays are already trotting out so many young players, and the bullpen is, no offense to any of the relief arms in there, but I would hazard to guess that in 2025, not too many of those guys are going to be coming out of the bullpen. If the Blue Jays intend on competing now, you do have major league caliber starters. Kevin Gausman is starting.
So just
tonight's
let Kevin
game.
Gausman pitch for four innings today.
Yeah,
and then he can
I
have
think they
a
might do that
back
anyways.
Soreness. You know, he's like, I gotta
Bowden
go.
Francis was pitching pretty well yesterday, and he was shut down before 100 pitches. I think you were going to see that no matter what the stakes of these games. The other thing you could do, but I don't think you're going to do it, is because you want Vlad to accumulate as many statistical achievements as possible. I mean, he's hit his 30 and 100, which are the big ones. But you don't want to deprive him of the opportunity, I don't know, to hit 35 and 110 or something. But, I mean, that would be the most obvious way to perhaps push the ball in one direction. The other thing hindering this is that they do have the Marlins the final three games of the season.
So where are the Marlins on that? Because
second last. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. So
they're also bad.
Yeah, they're sitting at Wayne Gretzky, 99 losses. So, yeah, I mean, they're miles better than the White Sox, as everybody is, but they have the second worst record in Major League Baseball. Yeah, the Blue Jays are not catching the sixth worst team. The Nationals are 3.5. I mean, the Nationals would have to go on a tear. That seems like untouchable territory, but the Pirates and the Rangers are right there. You get on a heater, you could be in trouble of leapfrogging both the Pirates and the Rangers. So the players that are playing in the game, obviously, always trying to do their best.
But if you looked at their lineup today, Vlad and Kirk are their only major league, like, constants.
Yeah, so. I mean, as currently
they had to put a couple in.
The Blue Jays do not have too many guys that I think are difference makers in the positive direction. And again, going to be factoring into 2025. Doesn't mean that, hey, Joey Loperfido couldn't have a 4-home-run game tonight. Is he in the lineup?
Yep, he is.
Who knows? Those guys have shown varying levels of promise, but it would behoove the Blue Jays to finish right where they are in the standings, because at this point, you want to come away with the return they got at the trade deadline, which was a lot better than maybe people anticipated, and then a top five pick. How about first overall?
I'm so down for that. So the Blue Jays are favorites tonight, Red Sox plus 110. Maybe they can... The dogs can win. As Adam Stanley said, every dog has their day. It's just cheer for the dogs, the Red Sox tonight. We were talking about this before the show because obviously wild card race and the playoff push is really exciting this weekend. But Mets and Braves, the series we talked about yesterday, one of the most intriguing ones, rained out today and tomorrow. There's a massive hurricane coming.
Yeah.
So their games have been pushed to a doubleheader on Monday in Atlanta beginning at 1:10. Lots of things at stake here, including obviously who might play in the wild card series. But if they play both games on Monday, wild card series starts Tuesday. Some of the whatever team would have to probably travel mostly across the country to play the next day. Think about how many bullpen arms you're going to use in a doubleheader on a Monday. You might be starting your wild card series already kind of behind the eight ball. And this was supposed to be a great series. Mets, Braves, like, could determine a lot. And unfortunately, Mother Nature got in the way.
I guess you can view it that way. And certainly if you're the Mets or the Braves or whatever team that gets through this, the final three game series, and then whatever the doubleheader, you'll feel like it was not fairly, it was not fair. But for me, somebody who's lived through a lot of game 163s, which we used to have as the tiebreaker, right? Like, there never used to be tiebreakers in baseball. So you used to just play an extra game. They don't do that anymore because of the wild card series.
This is
I love it.
You're getting like your 163 back.
Matt Holliday, we just talked about him, played in one of the most epic game 163s in the history of Major League Baseball. So as a baseball addict, we had an off
day
Monday where it was we had no baseball, and now we have baseball between two division rivals, and the winner could be going through to the playoffs. I love it. What's going to be interesting, though, is if they're probably not going to play them if they're meaningless. I don't know if they play the second one. If the first one decides it, the Diamondbacks are involved as well, right? Like, the Diamondbacks could be waiting on pins and needles to see the result of this doubleheader. It's
the day before.
Yeah, the possibility exists that one of the Braves or the Mets has already been eliminated but has to play this doubleheader against this other team.
And play spoiler, maybe.
Well, I mean, what kind of team are they going to field? And it is baseball, so weird stuff happens. But yeah, you could have, baseball that takes 8 hours to play, and you got to hop on a flight to San Diego or L.A. because the National League West is still up for grabs. Yeah, there's a lot of potential scenarios that are probably difficult for whatever team gets through that doubleheader.
You got your free day of baseball, though, so that is a nice win. Okay, so I'm going to do my best bets here with you, Ben, because I think we're going to get shy in a couple of minutes. Mine is for the Angels to help make history tonight. White Sox... I guess holding on hope the last couple of games, they found a way to win, but they are sitting out 120 losses. So tonight I think it happens. I think they set the record for 121 losses and counting, and the Angels beat them. Just kind of a pick 'em price, almost minus 116 for the Angels. But the White Sox have had a little bit of luck the last couple of days. I think it's time. Rip the Band-Aid. You get to be the newest, worst losers.
Yeah, there's people living in palatial estates that have been fading the White Sox all season. So, like, not a bad play.
It's time.
I'm going to take the Dodgers over the Padres minus 135. The Padres won the first game of this great series between these two teams. yesterday with a walk-off triple play.
That was sweet.
That punched their ticket into the postseason. Now, there's still there's things up for grabs. Winning the division is huge, not just because you get to fly a banner or pennant, but you also get a first-round bye. So that's obviously important. But there has to be a natural letdown here. Jack Flaherty against Dylan Cease. I got to think that there's going to be an emotional deflation. Also, you shut down that potent Dodgers lineup in game one. Can you do it in back-to-back days? I'm a little dubious of that. So, yeah, I like the Dodgers beating the Padres -135.
All right. Let's bring in Shai Davidi from the field, I believe, at Rogers Center, holding it down for us. Shai, how are you?
I'm all right. Just walked off the field, actually. Oh,
get back out there. We want to see you. We need you to pitch tonight to help the Blue Jays lose.
I don't think I definitely helped them lose. I've definitely not helped them win. But nobody wants to watch me pitch. That would not be a good scene for anybody.
No, it would be hilarious. But, yeah, I mean, they should be trying to lose right here, Shai. So I understand that, hey, the way North American sports work, it rewards bad teams, and that's bad. I actually hate it. But it's the world we live in. And as currently constituted, the Blue Jays have the fifth best odds of selecting first in next year's MLB player draft. They have the fifth most lottery balls. That would be a 10% chance. They're only a half game separating them and the Pirates. I know nobody in the organization is going to vocalize this or maybe not even think about it, but like that is significant, Shai. Come on. When we're talking about a team that is looking to accumulate as many assets as possible, having that the fifth most lottery balls is actually pretty important here when we look at the final four games of the season.
So, yes, but let me frame it for you this way. It does, in a strictly analytical sense, make sense to try to lose to maximize your opportunity in the draft lottery. And if you have players that are cool with that, then you absolutely have the wrong players. So, you know, you've got to be careful about what you're building into your franchise. And if you're building into a, hey, we should lose kind of mentality, like that's really dangerous. And I don't think that exists here. And I think if it did, that'd be a major problem. So yeah, like are they trying to win at all costs where like you would in a playoff chase where you push guys to, you know, 3 or 4 days in a row out of the bullpen or have a guy who's playing at 70% get out there to give you what he's got? No, because the situation doesn't dictate that. But are they purposely trying to lose games or put together less ideal lineups in order to lose? No, that's not happening either. And, you know, you've got your ace on the mound. Like, you're not throwing, this is last start of the season. You're not saying, hey, I don't care about the outcome of this game when he's going. He's out there to win. And if that wasn't the case, like, that's really bad for your franchise.
He might only throw 50 pitches, though. You know, just saying. Maybe.
I mean, I wouldn't think so in this case. You know, his back has been better. You know, and obviously that was a weird one. And, you know, I think he at that point was getting to where he was worried that he was doing something that might cause an injury somewhere else when he came out of that last start in Texas. And he tore him up a little bit afterward. I talked to him the next day. He was saying that, you know, he thought about it at night and was like, was that my opportunity to get a no-hitter? Was that going to be my day? But, you know, he also wanted to make sure he didn't injure his arm or injure a different part of his body. And so, you know, at that point in time, logic ended up ruining the day.
All right, let's talk about something more positive, which is Bowden Francis, another impressive one before the bullpen collapsed. But, like, watching this guy over the last, I guess, month and a bit has been probably my favorite part of the Blue Jays season, just his consistency and, I guess, coming out of the highs and lows that he already had this season. It's been really fun, and I guess we can start to project into next year. Like, what does this mean for the rotation? What does this mean for Bowden Francis and maybe how it shapes off-season decisions that the Blue Jays had previously thought they have to make and maybe get to reevaluate?
Yeah, so a definite highlight. And I think from to zoom out a little bit even further than that, for a farm system that has had very little success on the pitching side, not just this year, but other years, but also a ton of injuries this year, this is a good story from the farm system. And I know he wasn't exactly you know, a Blue Jays product start to finish, but he'd been in AAA with the team for a few years, bouncing back and forth last year and then finally sticking this year. So for them, you know, it's definitely something that they can cling to in that front. And I think he's someone who very much has cemented himself in the rotation. The club, the front office is looking at him as a starter in this rotation into next season. And that doesn't mean they're not going to work to insulate around him. But I don't think there's any doubt in terms of can he perform and have success. Now, the question is going to be, what's the longevity to that? Can he get to 150, 160 plus innings next year? We don't know because he hasn't done it. I believe his career high in the minor leagues was 130 or something in that range. So it's going to be sort of uncharted territory for him, and how he progresses from there, I think that's really the one unknown around him. But there is belief that he right now has the stuff, has the ability to be a starter, and now is the physical piece going to hold up over the course of the entire season?
All right, so expectations. What if he starts 25 games next year and has a league average ERA? Is that a good outcome? Is that a bad outcome? Is that a reasonable outcome? Like, where? I mean, because the last 9-10 starts have been unbelievable. I mean, it has you dreaming about a top-of-the-rotation guy, and it's such a small sample, it's hard to imagine him doing that for 30 starts or something. So what are the expectations? 25 starts in league average, where does that leave you as far as the expectation of Bowden Francis next season?
Well, so here, how about this? Like, if you could lock that in right now, if you could lock that in for 150 innings, would you?
I think I might. I would. Okay. Yeah, I would.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I probably would too. And like I think that's not an unreasonable outcome, right? I don't know how to rate it in terms of percentiles. And again, like for me, I think like the stuff and the ability, like his sense of how to use his repertoire, the fact that he was pitching with his velocity down a tick this month and still was getting results and didn't have to have his best velo to still find outs and have success. To me, that suggests that, you know, he's figured something out. It's still a relatively small sample across which he's done that, so it's tough to extrapolate much from that over a full season. And again, the physical piece, you know, like you just never know. I mean, just think about like who would have imagined that they would have 8 Tommy John surgeries in the organization this year, amongst other pitching injuries. So that's the one piece that I'd have a question on. But like, if he's healthy, I don't see why it's not, you know, a league average-ish ERA for around 150 innings. And as you saw over the past stretch, there's certainly the upside for a bit more if everything plays out right for him.
I'm glad you mentioned the 8 Tommy John surgeries. I had them all written down. I don't have to read them all now. But what I was going to ask you is that normal? Like, and if it is normal, what that's scary. But who gets held accountable for this? I know I've seen on your Twitter and Arden's over the last little bit that they're starting to see some coaches being dismissed through various levels of the organization. Is there something that can be done to fix this so we don't have 8 more pitchers get Tommy John next year?
So there have been other points in Blue Jays history where they've had clusters of injuries like this. You think about, 2011 or 12. Drew Hutchison, Brandon Morrow, and Kyle Drabek in the span of 4 starts.
Yeah.
Like, there are times where these types of things happen. And, like, if you look at the wider context, like, it's not a Blue Jay-specific problem. And then if you look at them over recent years, they really haven't had too many Tommy Johns. I have the number somewhere, but I can't recall them off the top of my head. But they haven't had an avalanche of these. So, like, I think in talking to Blue Jays people across the organization about it, the thing that's got them sort of most banging their heads against the wall is that they can't find commonalities, right? That you've got some players who are like out of high school. So you've got some who are out of junior college. You've got some out of college. You've got Alec Manoah, who's established in the major leagues. You've got some guys who are at the beginning of the year, some guys who are at the end of the year. So there's no through line for it. And, you know, like the Blue Jays are obviously frustrated. They're doing a lot of research and a lot of digging into this. And you know, I think across baseball, like you just think about the slate of injuries at the beginning of the year.
Yeah.
And everybody was talking about like, what is going to be the future of the starting pitcher? Like when this generation of starters retires, who's going to log the innings? You know, that's the point Chris Bassett made during a conversation we had earlier this year. So that would be my answer. Like we haven't seen a cluster like this in the Blue Jays organization in a long time. There have been other clusters like this. It is something that is within the game. It's not necessarily only Blue Jays specific, but like the Blue Jays, much like the industry as a whole, don't have answers right now.
Yeah, I have an answer. The human elbow is not supposed to withstand throwing a baseball 100 miles an hour. It's not likely to withstand the rigors of doing that for 100 pitches for 30 times a season. Okay. It doesn't look like we're going to see Jake Bloss in the major leagues for the Blue Jays this year. Of course, he did play for the Astros in the major leagues to limited success. In fact, his season in Buffalo was kind of, eh. There were some highlights, but there were certainly some lowlights. Some of the worst starts of his entire season, major league, minor league, happened with the Bisons. How do the Blue Jays feel about Jake Bloss's debut year within their organization?
Well, I think obviously they would have liked the better results, right? And you know, it's interesting how, and you know, when he was acquired, the conversations that I was having with people around the club was like, yeah, I mean, he's going to be here. Like, we can't wait to get him up here. And slowly that came, well, not yet and not yet. And I think there are a couple elements there. So he had a bit of a shoulder fatigue issue towards the end of his time with the Astros. And I think there was a sense that the Blue Jays wanted to be uber cautious with that. And the other thing, one other thing first is that he, you know, the performance was, as you mentioned, inconsistent. And so he didn't exactly going to force their hand. And then the final piece to that is we only caught the tail end of it, but you know, this is a guy who started the year in A-ball, right? And he's like drafted a year ago. He's had a remarkably fast ascent. Mm-hmm. And that was out of necessity in Houston. And it reminds me a little bit of Daniel Norris here in 14-15, and you know how he flew up and kind of had to pitch and was thrown in the fire a little bit. And
can they flip him for David Price?
Maybe. I mean, he was flipped for Yusei Kikuchi.
Yeah,
so,
true.
That was the first piece.
Samesies.
Right. But I think you want more than just 2 months of David Price right now.
Yes.
And so I think the Blue Jays wanted to pump the brakes a little bit on that and just kind of say, okay, you've done a lot. Let's kind of get you through the season and spend a little bit more time and have a more gradual and normal type of progression next season so that – because he is a talent, and the Blue Jays are hopeful that he could be a part of the rotation in years to come.
Well, Shai, it wasn't a successful season as many Blue Jays fans had hoped, but it was for Looney Dogs. Over 700,000 consumed. How proud are you as one of the Looney Dog, you know, promoters online at least?
I don't know if I'm a promoter. I'm more just the tracker.
Okay, well, that's important. We needed your numbers.
Yeah, and I actually haven't checked in yet on the final tally, but it was around.
I have it.
The yesterday's total.
71,000. Oh yeah, they ended up with 71,000. So they ended up eating
lots.
Too much. It's making
me sick.
Can't wait
for the book, Shai. Get on that book.
Yeah.
That is not a book I intend to write. So, honestly, I'm more just fascinated by the numbers, and I'm not a big hot dog guy myself. Fascinated by what the process is of serving up 50 to 70,000 hot dogs.
Not
in
the
one
other
night.
Process. I don't want to know the other process.
It is processed meat.
Yeah. No, the hoof and snout portion I don't need to find out. So.
Well, 700,000 and more to come next season. Well, Shai, we appreciate you jumping on. Enjoy the rest of these Blue Jays games and the playoff baseball that we're going to get to watch and the offseason that begins quite soon. Thanks so much, Shai.
I appreciate it, guys. Have a good one.
Shai Davidi. We mentioned it. There were 12 Looney Dog nights this season, and the Blue Jays soared over the 700,000.
How many did you attend?
I went to zero this year.
Oh, this year you went to zero?
But, yeah.
Oh, my God.
I know, but I just... I did my part. I
went
to seven, Ben.
So what?
I wanted to be there from
the
gates
game the other
open.
Day. I missed one inning. It's when not
gates,
a big deal.
I want there to be there from gates open to be able to get as many in. I know, it is embarrassing.
I mean, so much of your identity is tied up in eating hot dogs, and for you to miss out on this record-setting hot dog eating season.
But I passed on my love to others, and they fulfilled my journey.
Goodness, you got to get, you got to back
gonna
into
strip
the,
my title.
The business
next year.
Next year
I'm in there.
Yeah.
I'll consume some dogs.
Maybe you're bad luck, though. I mean, what if there's a decline in hot dogs eaten next year and you jump back in?
Then now
and
I'll stop going.
You took the seed of somebody who maybe was going to eat 30 hot dogs a game.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot to think about.
My body feels better this year.
Yeah, it's
less nitrates.
Correlation, not causation.
That's
necessarily
true.
But
All right. Well, Blue Jays baseball up next against the Red Sox. Last one against them this year. We'll see you tomorrow.